Mike Dempsey. Look, I hear from people all the time who are having tax problems, but don't be afraid of the IRS. Right now, you can talk or meet with local professionals that are here to help your specific tax issues. Accelerate your tax solution with Accelerated Tax Solutions.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, what a busy day it has been in the world of sports. My goodness. Whether it's out in Portland, Oregon, whether it's in the great state of North Carolina, the very latest out of the Atlantic Coast Conference. Of course, so much more happening as well in the world of college football. Gator fans, we're going to get you caught up with Demetrius Harvey coming up a little bit later on this hour. We'll do a double shot, a two for Tuesday with Demetrius, because we'll have some Jaguar talk to get into as well. I almost never start with the Atlantic Coast Conference for the simple reason of, let's just say for a moment that I was a comic, okay? You'd want to start with some of your best material, right? You don't want people to get up and leave. You don't want to get the catcalls. Just like I don't want you right now to change the radio dial after you just enjoyed 2 hours worth with the ladies from Helmets and Heels. But I have to start with the Atlantic Coast Conference. And again, I'm not a big fan of change to begin with. I think that that has been part of my makeup, part of my, you know, at this point in my life, I guess I'd have to go with the term Dianetics, right? No longer genetics, but now once you turn 50, it's Dianetics. And the Atlantic Coast Conference, 14 teams. I mean, when you look at it football-wise, it's basically a joke. It really is. I'll never forget when Miami joined and we said that with the two divisions forever, this conference was going to be filled with Florida State taking on Miami in October, and then we would get the rematch in early December, so you'd have to knock off one another. Certainly that last game would be more important because whether it was back in the day where there was a major bowl game that could have been there for you, and recently obviously there has been a college football playoff, just the importance of that game, well, it never transpired. And if you look what was announced today, it's basically a modified 8-game schedule. You're going to have three opponents that you will play each and every year. And then the other 10 teams, you're going to play them twice in a four-year span. So, you know, I was kind of kicking around today, and I say this all the time, and people don't believe me. And I don't know why you wouldn't believe me, but yeah, I'm a Florida State grad. Yeah, I'm a Florida State guy. But when I look at the college football schedule outside of Florida State, I tend to go directly to the Southeastern Conference, because that to me is where the best games are week in, week out. So Florida State, they will play Miami, and that has to happen. They got that one right. Miami as well, obviously, is going to play Florida State. But then all of a sudden I'm like, well, who else is the biggest rival for either one of these two schools? They put Clemson in there for FSU, which right now at this particular time is a bad thing, a really bad thing. You know, Clemson has dominated Florida State as of late, but you can go back and check history. I think Florida State won, what, 10 in a row and 11 out of 13 or something crazy like that. I mean, Florida State, when they came in 1992, they were the tops in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Certainly that has been replaced lately by Clemson. I know Florida State fans right now are like, yeah, I just kind of wish Clemson wasn't on the schedule. Deal with it. You are going to have to. Then you get to Syracuse and you're like, what? Wait a minute. How does this make any sense? If you're trying to, you know, come forward with rivalries that make any sense geographically speaking, why wouldn't you bring in Georgia Tech. That is the closest to Florida State if you look at miles between campuses. It would just, I think, make an awful lot of sense. It's very fertile recruiting ground for both universities, and yet that is not going to be the case. Syracuse, I mean, way, way, way out in upstate New York. I have no idea why Syracuse is in, why it's not Georgia Tech, or it's not one of the schools up and down in around Tobacco Road. So that's a surprise to me. However, I look at Miami, and it's even more bizarre, in my opinion. I mean, I know Miami BC over the years, they've had a couple of really good games. I'll think of the Ed Reed game when he took back that touchdown and how incredible Miami was that year defensively. But you got to be kidding me. If I was to ask you to list the top 50 college football rivalries right now today, BC, Miami wouldn't even be on the list. So I don't get that one. Louisville I'm okay with, because I think Louisville's kind of moved into the territory where if you look at traditional greats, obviously it's Clemson, it's Florida State, it's Miami. Those are the schools that have won national titles. Georgia Tech split a title in, what was it, 1990, 1991. It was one of those 2 years when you had, it was Michigan and Nebraska in 91. I think it was a UW and Georgia Tech in 1990. We had consecutive years where they split national titles between the Associated Press and the coaches poll. So, you know, the Miami-Louisville one I can live with, but the point I'm trying to make here, what a sad conference. I mean, seriously. I've heard people complain today that, you know, Georgia Tech's rivals are the most difficult of any of them. We're going to miss that Virginia Tech-Miami tradition, which I got to say, if you're ranking Atlantic Coast Conference games only, Miami and Virginia Tech is probably in the top five. I would absolutely agree with that. But, you know, they've also done such things as from 1910 on, North Carolina State has played Wake Forest. And coming up in a couple of years, 2025, again, you'll do it twice in a 3-year period or in a 4-year period. And this won't start until the 2023 season. You're going to ruin that particular rivalry. And, you know, that means nothing to me. That rivalry means nothing to me. But it's not about me. It's about the conference. And it's going to mean a lot to the people in the state of North Carolina. I mean, Duke should be playing North Carolina. They should be playing NC State and Wake Forest. You should find a way to have those four teams knocking off one another year after year after year. Those four schools in that small circle. And I understand with the 3-5-5 system that is now in place, someone is going to be left out. But overall, very, very disappointed by this. I don't think it'll bring or ignite any excitement. You know, we'll find out. Heck, today's the 28th of June. I think I go to Charlotte like July 19th for the Atlantic Coast Conference meetings, and they're going to try to create, you know, a big storyline here that, oh, the ACC, you know, we're growing our game. Look at what we're doing. I'm not a buyer here. I'm very disappointed with what they have done. So anyway, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about that tonight. If you want to join us, you can. The number is 641-1010 on the text line, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. And again, we got a lot of college to get into, including Demetrius Harvey is going to join us here coming up in a little bit. We're going to talk about the very latest here with the Florida Gators. The return of JJ. How was your trip?
It was great, but before I get to that, Virginia Tech Miami not being a game, that sucks.
Dude. Yeah, it does.
I love that game. Every year, I wouldn't say that it's a massive rivalry, but for Miami, we only have a couple. You know, it's Florida State, obviously, but outside of the state, that is it. So I'm disappointed in that.
If, in my opinion, if I wrote the schedule, I would have Miami play Florida State, Virginia Tech, and North Carolina. That would have been the three. If I was to pick Florida State, I would have said Miami, Clemson, Georgia Tech.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is I don't even know how long the ACC is going to be around. Like, yeah. I don't even know how long any of these conferences are going to be the way they are right now. So this might be all for naught, really. But Puerto Rico, dude, off the chain. Absolutely loved it. My favorite vacation so far that I've ever taken. I highly recommend it. You don't have to deal with, like, immigration. You don't have to deal with passports, standing in line, you know, at the airport for 4 hours, getting your bags checked because you're coming from a different country. Everybody speaks English almost there, at least like around the beach, San Juan area. I loved it, man. Went up in the rainforest, waterfalls, and then went to the cities. My girl speaks Spanish, so we did the local thing. You know, got to find the local places, bar hopped everywhere. I loved it, man.
All right. I've never been. It's one of the many places outside of the country that I've never been. It can't be that long of a flight.
No,
how long does it take to get from here? Did you leave from here? Or did you have to drive to Tampa or something?
No, I left from here, and it was a little less than 3 hours-ish. So probably right around 3 hours was the flight. It was fine.
Wow. You know, I've never done Panama. I've never done Costa Rica.
Oh, I heard Costa Rica's where it's at.
Yeah.
And cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll say this. Puerto Rico, where we stayed was super cheap. Like, the Airbnbs were cheap, you know. The beers are like $2 or $3 for like Heineken's, or, you know, more beers over here would be like $5 or $6, but you're still paying $7-$8 for a drink, you know, mixed drink on the beach or something like that, depending on where you're at. So it's not the cheapest place in the world, but it was great. I loved it.
Typically internationally, when I go, I've been doing the Dominican Republic, and it's a phenomenal place to play golf. Did you sniff around as far as golf in Puerto Rico? Did you see anything?
Was that part of it? That's not me. I mean,
I know, but were you aware of any packages? Is golf big in Puerto Rico? I don't know anything about what to expect there.
All I saw was baseball fields. They love baseball, dude. Like, every bar you're at, you know, here, they'll just put on ESPN at a bar, you know, whatever. Just throw a sports game on it, whatever it is. They had a baseball game at every single bar. Oh, let me tell you what you'll love, bro. There's no liquor license. So, like, you'll walk into a gas station, you'll walk into a clothing store, you'll walk into a child's daycare. They have, like, a full-on liquor bar everywhere you go. Mm. It's awesome. Like, we ended up partying one night at a convenience store that also was, like, a bar.
Yeah.
Hangout for the locals. It's
I love those type of things.
Exactly. It's a lot different than here.
Dominican Republic's the same.
I'm sure.
When you look at baseball is by far the most popular sport, and unfortunately over there in the Dominican Republic, it is so incredibly beautiful, but it gets pretty third world quickly, where, you know, there are some rough streets, and it appears to be a lot of people that are not working or certainly very low as far as the income. But you've
Puerto
got
Rico, not that vibe, really.
Really?
Like, yeah, they're doing a lot better than the Dominican. I think part of that's probably their United States territory.
You know, I felt that way about Jamaica. I've been to Jamaica in quite a while as well. But the Dominican Republic, they got those chain link fences, and they got baseball fields, and they're not the greatest fields. Mm. And, you know, you just see literally hundreds of kids on both sides of the dugout trying to get the bat, trying to be one of the, you know, nine guys, a position player out in the field. The love for baseball over there is scary. And all of a sudden, if you look at the international flavor now, and all the players coming from the Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Cuba, Venezuela, it is remarkable. I want to say it's like, you know, 30, 35, maybe even, I'd say around 30.
I would say probably more than that.
Percent of the game. I think the last I saw, blacks who were playing baseball was like 7%.
African-American blacks.
Yes. Yes. And
there's and every team right now, almost every team, I would say, has a guy from Asia, like a South Korean or a Japanese player. Mm-hmm. It's so international, man.
Yeah.
That's really what I love about baseball.
I'm confused. It is. It's a total international game now.
And, like, we talk about being able to lift guys out of poverty, like, these dudes live in poverty so bad it's unimaginable to us.
Yeah.
And obviously there is parts of Puerto Rico like that, but it's not everywhere. It's harder to find than I'm sure it is in the DR.
Mm-hmm.
But I would recommend it. A great trip, man.
Dominican Republic's really weird because you have these, you know, you have these nice resorts and you have these phenomenal golf courses, and then you head out a block or even two and you're like, wait a minute, where I am. Now, you can make the same case
here
that's certainly the deal at Augusta.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Augusta National. Okay, you see the pictures, the descriptions, the accounts, and when you have Jim Nance, you know, whispering sweet nothings in your ear, and you get the beauties of the Masters, you're thinking that is the greatest piece of or slice of heaven in the United States of America.
You think it must be in like the most secluded area in all of the world.
Right. Then you take a left and a right, and you're like, where in the hell am I? So, I don't know. Anyway, welcome back. Good to know that you had a good trip there in Puerto Rico. So, yeah, I've never been. But I love it. I love tropical trips. And
the beaches were great.
Man. Were they really?
Yeah. They're, some of the ones around San Juan kind of sucked, but that's not where we stayed.
How are the people over there?
Okay. The people, first of all, like I said, most people that are working, like as employees at a bar or restaurant, they're English speakers for the most part. But there, see, my girlfriend's been, I have to preface this by saying she's Colombian. She's been to Colombia countless times, been to Venezuela a few times, Costa Rica, whatever. So she's been all these places. And she made a comment that was like, wow, a gringo like you, talking about me, like in these other countries, gets treated like a king. Like, you know, you're an American. Let me do anything to help you out. In Puerto Rico, it was the complete opposite. She was, like, shocked by that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, the second she starts speaking Spanish to them, it's, you know, nothing but respect. But I think it has to do with they've all been here. Like, a lot of those people have lived here. They can go back and forth as they please, and they have family here. And I'm nothing special to them.
Well, that's a surprise because I know that in Jamaica and in particularly the Dominican Republic, that when they see someone like me or someone like you coming towards them,
they want
them,
your money.
It's exactly it.
Yeah.
They think that we're well off.
Yeah.
That we are visiting them, therefore we must have a lot of money, and they're going to basically do whatever it takes and smile and do everything else to try to get some of that cash. But you're telling me that's not really the case in Puerto Rico.
It wasn't exactly like that.
Well, it's like going to Boston or something?
No, when you go to
New York?
They're not kicking you out. I mean, they treat you with respect, but it's not like
Sox lose, get the hell out of here.
There was plenty of people that didn't treat you with respect.
Yeah.
But
you go back.
Oh, my God, in a second. You know what? I really love driving. Driving
really?
There. It was like wacky racers. You know, the lanes are all over the place. It's whatever you want it to be. And you know, you're driving fast, swerving, and it's a rental car, so I don't care. You know, it was crazy, man. If you've ever been to any of these Bahama islands, or probably Mexico's the same way, the driving is outrageous.
Oh, yeah.
There. It's fun, but I wouldn't want to do it every day.
Yeah, and in the DR, there's a lot of mopeds, a lot of bikes. And, yeah, I remember from years ago in Jamaica, man, it didn't matter where you were. People were just going to pull out right in front of you. And they just expect you to stop.
Red light, green light, whatever.
Yeah. All right, good stuff. So JJ is back. All right, let's get to this huge story here. We touched upon it briefly yesterday with Jaden Rashada. He's on his way to Miami. Still trying to figure out all the ins and outs involved with the collectives. But the comments that were made about the lawyer representing Rashada about the University of Florida and their collectives are, well, interesting, to say the least. So let's bring in Demetrius Harvey. He covers the Jaguars. He also covers the University of Florida, and get the very latest from him on recruiting. I mean, I know a lot of Gator fans have been upset. You still brought in some pretty good recruits the last couple of days. I know Billy Napier shaved a few guys off the roster. Apparently no dead weight is going to be the case in Hogtown. And this story is enormous as well. So Demetrius Harvey goes into the night next. My name is Rick Bolu. This is the home of the Jag.
Now, another interview on the Farrah and Farrah phone line, brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
All right, 8:24, good to have you with us. My name's Rick Ballew alongside JJ. We do it late on Tuesday till 10, tomorrow night, Thursday night, Friday night. We go 6 to 8, the same deal on Monday. All right, let's do a two-for-one here. A little bit of Gator talk, a little bit of Jaguar talk. We always love our conversations with Demetrius Harvey with SI All Gators, and he goes into the night with Rick Ballew. Demetrius, how you been?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself, man?
I'm doing good, and boy, it's been a really interesting week for the University of Florida. First things first, they landed 3 4-star defensive players. I would think that that would be pretty good, and I know you can't always trust Twitter, but man, it seems like a lot of these folks are looking for one of the 7 bridges here in town.
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to the most important position on a football team is the quarterback. So when you lose out on a guy who practically everyone had it narrowed down, you know, as of a couple weeks ago to either Texas A&M or Florida, and then Miami, maybe a late push, and then you lose out on him to your in-state rival in the Miami Hurricanes, you know, it sends people into a frenzy. And then, of course, social media is the way it is, where everyone's sort of in their own little bubble and it sort of bursts. You know, that's basically what occurred on social media. Now, you're right. They landed 3, you know, in my opinion, outstanding football players. Isaiah Nixon, the edge rusher out of Lakewood.
Yep.
They landed Sharif Denson out of Bartram Trail, you know, right up the street from here in Jacksonville. And Gavin Hill, you know, right up the street in Gainesville. So I think that those 3 guys are you know, perfectly suited to come in and make an impact at Florida. And it should be something that Gator fans are excited about. But, of course, like I said, you know, the quarterback position is the way it is. So when you lose out on Rashada, that just is sort of how it goes.
All right. For starters, and you're on the beat, so you have the advantage. But I'll be the first to raise my hand and say, I'm still trying to figure out the NIL. To me, it's not in concrete. I mean, there's and if you are aware, I'd love to hear it, because I'm trying to figure everything out and how things have changed in our state and how things are different in the state of Florida from the other states. So when you hear that it's $9.5 million, I mean, that's more money than Joe Burrow. That's more money than Trevor Lawrence. How valid is that as far as your understanding?
As far as my understanding, I'm not sure, honestly. I don't know how much he may or may not have made. He's come out and already said anything that's related to NIL and his decision to join Miami is false and things of that nature. So from my perspective, I'm not exactly sure. But what I do know is that, yes, you know, NIL is obviously playing a major role in recruiting right now. Whether the NCAA can get involved with that is a super tricky issue that I still can't wrap my brain around. I believe there's a lot of legalities to it. The NCAA didn't put safeguards in place when they knew that this was a possibility. So that sort of forbids them from suing and some are getting, you know, it allows people to sue and then makes it so that the NCAA has no defense in some aspects, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no legal expert, but yeah, I think that this is something that's going to you know, unfold over the next few years. I think that we're going to see a lot more quote unquote deals, you know, made by whether it's agents to collectives or things of that nature in order to, you know, get these people in. Obviously, it's forbid by the NCAA to for teams to actually pay a player or to pay paid in order to come to the school. So it's just a lot of confusion, and I understand why everybody's confused, because I myself am confused too.
All right, Demetrius Harvey's our guest. He's with SI All Gators. He also covers the Jaguars at Big Cat Country. Back to collectives. Mm-hmm. Do you feel you have a pretty good understanding of how that works at Florida?
Yeah, I mean, from what I understand, it's set up almost as if it's a crowdfunding effort. So basically, fans can, you know, sign up on the website. They can pay a certain amount. They get a certain amount of exclusive content, whether it be meet and greets, things of that nature. You know, for example, Anthony Richardson is part of the Gator Collective. He'll go out to, you know, maybe a restaurant for a meet and greet and autograph signing. I think they actually just did one maybe in Orlando over the past couple of days. So basically that's set up in order to pay the players, from what I understand, currently on the roster. And then it can also, be benefit of getting players signed who are, technically not on the roster yet in a way, at least from what I understand. That could be completely wrong, but at least what I do know is that the players on the roster can benefit. Basically it's a, endorsement deal.
Mm-hmm. Now, my understanding is that coaches cannot be involved. And I know you just sure. said that a couple mm-hmm. of minutes ago. So is it like your own internal folks involved now? Because I know schools have hired people to take over this responsibility. But, I mean, obviously there's conversations between the coaches yeah. and these people. But, I mean, how do you decipher that?
Yeah, it's so messed up. I mean, we all know how recruiting happens and how it's happened in the past. Players have been paid and things of that nature. Now, for the Florida Gators, they're not going to be directly affiliated with the Gator Collective. It's a, separate entity set up by, outside people, either, a rich alumni guy or things of that nature. Like, they'll funnel money in sometimes into that collective. I know that the collective actually signed up with the Gator Guard, which I forget his name at the moment, but an alumni of Florida, or actually I believe he dropped out, but he has ties to Florida. And I don't think that the coaches necessarily are able to have communication in that way, in the way of, like, they can't say, hey, this is the player we want, go sign him to this, and then we'll be able to get him. I don't think that they have that. I think that what the school's job is to educate the players on NIL, educate them on the resources that are available. And if the collective is out there, they're of course going to talk about it and say, hey, we have this great thing set up by the fans and set up by all these other people. Hopefully that will entice people to show, hey, we have great NIL at Florida. And as far as I know, that's the extent of it.
All right. Listen, college football has always been unscrupulous. It's always been dirty. And I think that's kind of a cool part of it. It's always been underground. But when you have the attorney for Rashada come out, Michael Caspino, and say that I'm not going to read the quote because it's lengthy, but he's never going to deal with Florida Gator collectives again. To me, and by the way, I'm a Florida State grad, to me, that's almost like a smear campaign. I mean, how dare a lawyer point to a blue blood and say they don't do it right over there? They're unethical. They're dysfunctional. I mean, again, these are totally mm-hmm. uncharted waters. So we have no idea what's going to come out of this. But you're having a lawyer here fire shots, which could affect other recruits in this state or anyone else at the University of Florida.
Right. It's crazy. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, obviously no one has. NIL is so new. The collective came out, against the California lawyer that you were talking about. And they said that they never had any communications with him or Rashada or any other recruits. And they actually basically shot down the collective and the lawyer, Darren Hittner, I believe his name is. They shot down that the lawyer had any involvement at all, and they basically called him unethical, and a couple other guys called him unethical too, and it's just all a mess. I mean, honestly, this whole situation is bizarre to me. I don't really know the inner workings. I guess only the people who worked for the Gator Collective or the people who are tied in deeply to that will actually know what actually occurred. But yeah, to me, it's wild to think that this is where it's at right now, and I'm not sure exactly what the next steps are.
All right, when it comes to the Jaguars or any NFL team, we know the contracts. We know what guys are overpaid. We know what players are underpaid. We know what guys are in the final year of their contract. And I think the building, for the most part, league-wide, is this is your profession. You go out and earn what you can. What do you think it's going to be like, whether it's here at Miami now with Jaden Rashada, or if it's at Texas with Manning coming in, Arch Manning? I mean, you bring in a kid like that who's 18 years of age, and you're paying him all this money. Yeah. What's the locker room going to be like?
It can't be stable, because I mean, if you think about it, these are all 17, 18-year-old kids coming in, and they've come in with no money at all. A lot of them come from, you know, maybe poorer backgrounds, things of that nature. And then they come into the locker room, and all of a sudden this new kid comes in with all this fancy clothes on and you know, a brand new car. He hasn't even had a snap in practice yet. I just can't imagine this being a healthy environment for a locker room. Obviously, I would have to talk to some more players about this, but it just wouldn't make sense to me why there would be a guy that comes in making so much money, hasn't even done anything on the field, and yet you're here with guys who have put, you know, years into the program who won't even touch close to that. So absolutely, I think that this has to have some sort of effect, and I think that this is so new that we haven't really seen it yet. I think next year and the year after that, we'll be able to actually tell.
All right, just kind of wrap it up this way, and I'll use Brenton Cox as an example, or Ventro Miller as an example, and it could be someone that's not even as highly recognizable as those two. But let's say you're a 2-year, 3-year starter. And, you know, you've started 30-some-odd games at the University of Florida, or any school for that matter. And who knows what your collective is, and you see these kids come in. Number one, you're going to be pissed, and I understand that. But number two, isn't that going to force even more within the transfer portal?
Absolutely. I think that I forget where I heard this. I think it might have been on one of the Pivot podcasts that Fred Taylor hosts. But Ryan Day out of Ohio State came out and said that they needed, I think it was around $13 million to keep, you know, the entire roster together, basically, in terms of NIL. And he means by that is if these players don't get that money, they're probably going to transfer out. And I think that the combination of NIL and the transfer portal is going to be messy. I think that you're going to start seeing kids say, hey, I'm not making a lot of money here, you know, but, you know I can go over to Texas or whatever school it is and make X amount of money, and, you know, I'll just transfer. And because of the one, you know, waiver, basically, it allows them to play immediately. So it's going to be tricky. It just has to be, in my opinion, because of how athletes have shown the willingness to use the transfer portal. Players will enter and then exit and enter and exit and things of that nature too. So it's going to be interesting to see. I really do think that when players start to see other opportunities around the country, they're going to hone in on that and want to go over there.
I know it was real, you know, we were in the infancy of it a year ago, but man, I would, I kind of wish it was this year that I just love to know how, you know, Auburn has always been known as a school that listens to their big-time boosters, those with deep pockets. But you look at Oklahoma. Imagine if that was this year and you had Spencer Rattler sitting there who's a Heisman Trophy candidate. Then you bring in the five-star Caleb Williams. And just imagine a conversation where you got that big booster saying, you've got to play Williams, and you've got the coach at the time, Lincoln Riley, saying, I'm not going to play Williams because Rattler's better. That may not be the best analogy, but you know that stuff's coming in college football.
Absolutely. It's just the nature of it. I mean, you have a guy that's coming in and all of a sudden he's making this much and they're dedicated or they're, you know, in on this player so heavily that, you know, obviously they're going to want to play him instead. And it's just a mess. I mean, I think the major issue is the NCAA didn't come out with ground rules and set this, you know, responsibly up, because right now it's basically a free market. And we're basically seeing everybody doing whatever they want to do without any repercussions, obviously, to an extent. So, I mean, right now, it's just a big mess to me.
Yeah, it really is. That is Demetrius Harvey. He is the deputy editor for SI All Gators. I want to get some Jags in. We're out of time. You also cover them as the beat writer for Big Cat Country. This could be 30 seconds worth. What did you see here during minicamp?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, they didn't bring the vets in for minicamp, but what I saw was, you know, just it was kind of status quo. I thought that, you know, Doug Peterson addressed the media with, you know, a lot of optimism. There was a reason why he wanted to hold out the veterans and tell them, hey, you guys can have these few days off. They bought in. They're still sort of reeling from last year, obviously. But, you know, I think that from what I saw, it's off to the right start as far as leadership. And I think that that's the best thing that they could get right now.
No doubt. Demetrius, thank you as always, sir.
I appreciate it.
There he goes, Demetrius Harvey. Does great work covering both teams here, both the Gators and the Jaguars. The beat for Jacksonville and Big Cat Country, and deputy editor for SI All Gators, covering the University of Florida. All right, if you want to comment on that, by all means, you can. And, you know, at this point, it's been oversaturated, and I'm really interested in the future. And I think with this sport, there's a part of me that kind of wants to hear some of those stories. You know, when I grew up in Boston, there was a saying, 25 players, 25 cab rides home. You know, the very good teams of the mid-70s, mid to late 70s in Boston, they didn't get along. You look at the A's in 72, 73, and 74. Oakland won three straight World Series, and reportedly they didn't get along. And I just cannot imagine what it would be like to be a 2 or 3 year starter at a school and have a kid come in who's never taken a snap, making all that money. And that is where we are now in the world of college football. So you want to comment on that, the best way to do so is on the text line. That number is 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. Thank you to Demetrius Harvey, our guest on the Farrah and Farrah phone line. Rick Ballew here with JJ.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, I want to save for the top of the hour because it was just phenomenal today. I'm talking about the 30-minute press conference that involved Brooks Koepka, Pat Perez, and Patrick Reed as we get ready for the Live Tour, part two. This time we'll be in Portland, Oregon, beginning on Thursday. Get to that coming up in our second hour. Again, I'll be with you tonight till 10, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 6 to 8. You want to respond to anything you just heard involved in the world of college football recruiting, you definitely can. I don't know what to forecast here. I mean, I began the show talking about the ACC, and I got all it doesn't matter what I talk about on the text line is so incredibly receptive. And I really appreciate that because I think this show is identified as one that really tries to get the listeners involved, particularly on our text line. I didn't get one freaking response to the 7 or 8 minutes I spent on the Atlantic Coast Conference today. And in my opinion, that speaks volumes of how people really feel right now about this conference. Now, when you get to recruiting and you get to the NIL and you get to the University of Florida and you get to Miami, who, by the way, also added another big-time recruit today, a recent decommit from Clemson. He's a wide receiver, Nate Joseph, a four-star on his way to the U. Not a big guy, 5'8", 170. Who was the small wide receiver back in the day out of Texas? God, he was awesome. Not Jack Jackson with Florida. It's on the tip of my tongue right now. Miami, late 80s, early 90s. Kind of came in after the Michael Irvin, Blades, Perryman. You have any idea what
Mike
I'm talking about?
Mike Adams?
Nope. Wasn't Mike Adams.
Wayne McCarthy?
Mm-mm.
Ron Weaver?
He was a kid out of Texas.
Oh, where did he play? He didn't play at Texas.
No, he played at Miami. He was a wide receiver, but he was a smaller guy. And it was before Santana Moss. Oh man, he was one of my all time favorite Hurricanes.
In my era, it was Roscoe Parrish, who was almost died on the field in the Florida State game. Was sort of a small guy.
Took that hit.
Slight guy.
Yeah, took that massive hit. I'm surprised I can't think of this guy's name. That is disappointing, but. Oh, well. So that's the latest there. A little bit of beef here going on now between Miami and Florida as far as the fan bases.
I absolutely love it.
And they don't play with one another.
I love that Billy Napier, this master recruiter, seems to suck at recruiting. Interesting.
Well, they did get three good defensive players, did Florida. But, yeah, I mean, they've lost a couple that they're not happy about. And let me see here. All-time leading receivers at Miami. This is going to bother me.
Oh, he's on the list.
He's well, this is Miami, not the Dolphins. I want the Canes. I got to. My guess would be that he'd probably
Brett
be in
Perryman,
the probably be in the 20s or something like that. As soon as I see the name, I will know. Not Wesley Carroll. That's a good one. He was a back who also caught the football. Jamie German. You talk about a five-star that never panned out. Jamie German. I mean, didn't he go to the defensive side of the football when it was all said and done?
Horace Copeland, Yateel Green, nope. Dale Dawkins.
Yateel Green was one of the most talented wide receivers to ever play at Miami. I think it was 94 when I was on the sideline. He made a sideline grab that was absolutely, totally spectacular. But I want to say he blew out his knee, and he was never really able to live up to his potential. And, you know, that was disappointing because he was a phenomenal football player. I don't know why I can't find it here. All right. I do apologize. I know I'm not going crazy. I know it's
We need Leon Searcy.
Stanley Shakespeare. He was like part of their first title in 1983. I thought this guy would have been higher ranked. I'm all the way down to the 80s here, and I still don't see him. So I'll look during the next break, but this is absolutely driving me crazy because he's on the tip of my tongue. Because I remember he was on special teams, and he had a big hit. I think it was on Tamarack Vanover. It was that same game that Vanover, it was the 92 wide right two game where Vanover took back the opening kick, and then Florida State didn't score again the rest of the game. That is when Marvin Jones had that huge hit as well. I can't believe he's not part of one of the all-time leading receivers historically. He's not even in the top 100. Kevin Williams. There you go. I just found it. Kevin Williams. He was selected in the second round by the Dallas Cowboys, so he was a Jimmy Johnson pick. He played in 1990, 91, and 92. 78 career receptions, 1,039 yards, only 3 touchdowns. He was also a kick returner, but he was an animal. He was a smaller guy that was just a great football player. And, well, that was the name.
Favorite small NFL player. I love Darren Sproles.
I grew up with Minnie Mack Heron, okay, that was kind of like the halfback in the days who am I thinking of here? Sam the Bam Cunningham. And, you know, Mark Johnson and guys like that, but he was a lot of fun to watch play.
5'5".
Mack Heron?
Yeah.
He went
170.
He went to jail for something. Don't remember.
Mainly on drug convictions.
Mm-hmm. Probably go with him on the surface.
He was arrested 20 times.
20?
20.
I love the kid at Florida State, Greg Reed. Big fan of Greg Reed. I was a big fan of Cliff Abraham, another kid out of Texas who got beat in that 92 wide right two.
Mojo, of course.
One-on-one against, I think it was Lamar Thomas who ran right by Cliff Abraham. Yeah, but, man, he was so stacked.
Mm-hmm.
So was a Mack Heron for that case. That's pretty interesting, though. Because there's not a lot of small football players. Who was the hard-hitting safety a couple of years ago with Indianapolis?
Bob Sanders?
Yes. He would fit into that category, I think.
We're not allowed to talk about him anymore, but Ray Rice was a little guy. You don't see too many of these roly-polies anymore.
Ray Rice has been, like, totally eliminated. Yeah, he's gone.
History books will not read Ray Rice anymore. He's like Aaron Hernandez.
It's like, yes, yeah, we said yesterday was the nine-year, I don't know if we can call it an anniversary, but going back 9 years ago to the day that Aaron Hernandez was arrested. And we've all seen it, you know, came out of the house with that white T-shirt on, spit on the ground, and he went away. And
I'm still, like, shocked by that story.
Yeah, because
he was so good.
Oh, and he never won. And
that offense was so good. That tight end room, oh my God.
They never won a Super Bowl with him. They lost to the Giants.
Is that true?
They won, obviously, a bunch with Gronk, but they never won with Aaron Hernandez. And that guy could do so much. And I know before I've had you pull up the picture of his brain compared to another, 25, 26-year-old brain or however. I don't even know if he was that. I guess he was around 25, 26. Yeah, but there's so much that we don't know. And, you know, you read Javier Baez's book, the one who defended Casey Anthony, and you get a totally different perspective from when you read the, the Patterson book.
James Patterson?
It's I have them both. And it's remarkable. Honestly, it's like watching Fox News and then watching CNN. It's unbelievable, the perspective that is put on this. Now, remember, Bias got him out of the second murder, or the second murder case.
The Lloyd case? Or was that the one that he got in trouble
the
with?
The second one. That he, when Javier Baez defended him, they got a not guilty. And then they were going to go back and, I know that double jeopardy.
Jose. Javier Baez played for the Cubs.
Yeah, okay. Jose Baez. My bad. He's a Florida State grad. Jose Baez. And, you know, he got Casey Anthony off. And he defended Aaron Hernandez in his second trial. And you know, you read his book. They said they were going to – I don't know how they were going to pull it off because, you know, you have double jeopardy. I don't know if you can – in the state of Massachusetts, if you can introduce new evidence or whatever it was. But they felt good that
it's a double
that was going to happen. Yeah.
And he got acquitted from both of those. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
God, this guy was –
oh, he was crazy.
Wow, he was. I forgot how many murders were involved. And in Miami, he allegedly killed somebody.
Well, he allegedly shot his buddy coming out of a strip club in Miami.
That's what it was.
He allegedly...
His buddy with friends like that.
He allegedly shot two guys at a stoplight in Boston because someone spilt a drink on him.
Jeez, man. Remember there was rumors about him shooting a guy at Florida.
Yeah, punching him in the face. I mean, I guess he was with Tebow. They came out of a restaurant. Didn't pay a tab. Hernandez turned around, I guess, punctured his eardrum. But we don't...
Troubled.
We don't know what happened. I mean, to me, that's... I kind of want, an end game. I want some of these stories that are out there.
You want closure.
Yeah. I'd really like to know. And
his suicide was certainly weird.
Well, yeah.
I don't think there was anything nefarious behind it. Epstein style or anything, but he didn't seem like he was going to kill himself. He was adamant about being innocent. Yeah, 27 years old.
Yeah, I don't think it was a Whitey Bulger or Epstein deal where he was beaten up and killed in jail. I mean, all the evidence pointed to
a suicide,
a clever way of doing what he did, if I can use that word. But then again, who knows what really happens behind bars? I mean, you got to be kidding. And it happened right after the day that lady, she's like an investigator. I don't know who she worked with or for. It might have been the Boston Globe or whatever, but it's in the documentary where she went on WEI and talked about his sexual orientation. And within 24 hours, he was dead. So a lot of people believe that is the reason. But if you go back to Baez's book, he says that is 100% not true. And that was never the case for Aaron Hernandez. So, again, whether you want to believe it or not.
What's the best documentary to watch on Aaron Hernandez? What's the one you're referring to? Is it on Netflix?
You know what? I've seen every one of these that I honestly do not know. No matter what it is, if it comes out with any of this stuff, I watch them. The books are always better than what you get on TV.
The mind of Aaron Hernandez is what's coming
consistently
up. The killer inside.
Well, it's the one
Netflix.
It was the one that the high school quarterback comes out and said they had a relationship, and then the jailhouse snitch comes out and says they have a. It was that one, so I don't remember which one it was, but it was a 3 or 4 part series.
Yeah, 2020.
Like one of them was on the CTE in his brain. All right, we're going to head to this break. You know, speaking of brains, my mom has had multiple brain surgeries, and she hasn't been doing well at all in assisted living, and it's really a shame. But to watch her kind of fall into all of this over the last several years has been very, very hard. But every once in a while, there's been some humorous moments along the way. And one thing that she's had this now since 2013, okay, and it was one surgery after another. So, you know, we're around 10 years. And every time I would talk to her, they were in Boston, and it'd be, Ricky, did you hear about Aaron Hernandez? And it'd be the same thing every single time I picked up the phone. Yeah, Mom, I did. Can you believe what he did? And I'd be like, no, I cannot believe it. And then she'd turn around, and their third question would always be, he had all that money and a beautiful family. Why would he do something like that? I'm like, Mom, I don't know. So it was one night. It was the same two questions. Can you believe what happened to Aaron Hernandez? Why would he do something like that? And I'm like, I don't know. And then she turns around this one time and she says, do you think he'll ever play again for the New England Patriots? And I said, Mom, I don't think there's a prayer in the world that he will ever play again for the New England Patriots. She drops an S-bomb and says, damn it, we need him. And I thought it was one of the funniest. You got to understand where my mom was going with this now. I mean, she was very, very, really slowing down, but still had that love in that particular way. So anyway, quick story there. All right, let's get to the latest with the LIV. I call it the LIV tour. It's the LIV tour. And this press conference today was one of the best press conferences I've seen in a long time because so much information was handed out by these three golfers, three members formerly of the PGA Tour. It was announced today, you know, that Pat Perez, and I think it's already been out before, and Patty Reed have officially resigned. Brooks Koepka has not resigned from the PGA Tour. But if you listen to the nuts and bolts and what they said, you may have a different perspective on the LIV Tour. You may not, but I'm going to share it with you on the other side.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, a lot of football news. Going to get to the LIV Tour. But day one, nothing came out of the Deshaun Watson hearing. And for those of you not aware of this, Sue Robinson is going to have the ruling here. She's going to be the one that's going to hear both sides. She was agreed upon by both the National Football League and the National Football League Players Association to be the individual to determine the penalty for Deshaun Watson. And right now, they couldn't be farther apart. The NFL wants a year, maybe more. The NFLPA says nothing. Zip. He shouldn't even get one game. So it's going to be very, very interesting. It's what, Tuesday night right now? There's some thinking that this could be done in a week, okay? This could be done this week. This has all the writings of, to me, you know, one of those Friday 5 o'clock news dumps. Let's come in with it, you know, right now, and maybe that'll be the case. But it's going to be very interesting, no question about it. Before we get there, Steve Smith Jr. Well, I guess it was Steve Smith Sr., actually. He was a real tough guy as a little guy. I love Warwick Dunn. I don't know how I left him out. One.
Steve Smith.
Oh, he's
like
a tough
texter
guy.
Said, acted and played like a big guy.
Yeah.
Which he definitely did and talked a lot of crap. I love guys like that.
Tough guy, no doubt. A couple more here on MJD. Someone called MJD a bowling ball with knives.
I've heard that.
I don't remember who actually termed that. But I thought it was pretty good. The 5085 asked you, says, be honest, did you go to a cockfight?
No, and I'm upset that I missed out on that.
Really? I don't know if I want to do that. I don't think I would.
That seems fun.
And listen,
I'm not going to see dogs tear each other apart. But chickens, roosters, yeah. Who cares? Well, we eat them anyways.
Listen,
right?
I'm in with the circle of life, and I'll admit it to you. When some big old wildebeest tries to cross the Nile, and you see those crocs,
tore up.
I'm gonna stick. I'm going to watch it for a little bit. I'm like, you absolutely. You dumb wildebeest.
Or like an anaconda uncorks its jaw and slowly swallows an entire like zebra.
Do you hear about the python they found in the Everglades? 225 pounds.
Whoa.
225 pounds.
I got to look it up. Do they have pics?
Yes, they do have pics. They found it while you were on vacation.
And but I know that's your thing.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, my God. 122 eggs.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's totally my thing. I just can't get up for cockfighting, though. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I guess I didn't have the look of a guy who needed to be invited to a cockfight, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's just not my thing. In Los Angeles, I went to a turtle race once. That's
oh
kind of
my
speed, an underground turtle race in a bar. That was fun. But, yeah, I don't think I would like to see that.
Another guy was asking if I had medallas, which I'll say was the wateriest, crappiest beer I've had in a long, long time. It sucked. I guess that's their local, like, you know, their Bud
Light. Okay, that's their beer?
Yeah, or whatever.
Because you go to Jamaica, you're going to drink a lot of Red Stripe.
Red Stripe is good, though. I enjoy Red Stripe.
Well, after about 80 of them, you're looking for something else.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And Presidente.
All right.
Is the beer of taste in the Dominican Republic. So what is it again?
Medalla, which it's the yeah is two L's.
Don't know anything about it.
Don't
know anything about it.
Keep it like that. You're fine with your Millers.
This same guy says, you guys want me to share this on air? I'll keep it PG. Yeah, all right. If you can keep it PG. Now, what are you going to share with us? Are you going to share with us?
Well, he said at the cockfight, it was the gringos versus locals, which I enjoy that. A little friendly competition. So, like,
so
what?
It's all the
guys said to bring their
so
own.
So, if you're vacationing, you have to pick a certain cock?
I guess.
And if you're a local, you root for another cock?
You have to gamble on the other one.
Are those the rules of cockfighting in
Puerto
Rico?
Apparently. You know, I was.
What if you want to.
I just wanted to go.
What if you want to pick a local bird, a local rooster? You're not allowed to?
I guess that's out. I wanted to go to a baseball game, but apparently the league there doesn't start until November. And I was like, oh, yeah, winter league.
So there's local cocks and gringo cocks. That's what this guy's telling us. And there's
that sounds like a band.
There's no in between. You're forced to pick one way. No, I would not. There's a lot of things that I haven't done that I still want to do. I got to be honest with you. I have no interest in watching a cockfight. None. Not even a little bit. And I certainly do not support a dogfight.
All right, we have our texter on the line.
But again, man, you know it's coming when all of those zebra are getting ready to cross the Nile, and you just like for every bad call that your team has ever made, it's just like a bunch of referees trying to cross the water,
that's
and those
Terry
crocs,
Porter.
Oh, those crocs just sit there and munch them. But that's that's to survive the cockfight. All right, my screen's down. Who are we going to?
His name is Andrew. This is our guy. This is the text.
Andrew
about the cockfight. Yes,
welcome.
Hey, thank you. No, in terms of the zebras, you don't have to be the fastest. You just got to be faster than the guy next to you.
There you go. What's up? Now, this is in Puerto Rico where you saw this?
Yeah. Yep. I have friends that have lived there for years and got to go visit a few years ago, probably 2017. And they know some of the local bartenders around Hobos Beach. Down south by Rincon.
Okay.
Dang, you don't need to give out their info,
yeah.
Bro.
Yeah, it's a great little beach. Great spot.
All right.
But hopped in with one of the locals, went up to the mountains, and a cockfight in Puerto Rico is no different than boxing or anything here.
Yeah, so it was like in a bar and like a back room in somebody's house?
It was in a large kind of warehouse.
How many people?
There was hundreds.
Whoa, I love that.
Kind of an ante room when you walk into the establishment that houses all the fighters. The reds on one side, the blues on another.
Oh, man.
All of your bettors can come in and look at all of the fighters.
Like a weigh-in.
Yep.
You get now, to see them without their shirt on.
Now, are the seriously here? Now, are these cocks? Are they introduced? Do they come out? Do they come out to music?
And that, no music.
Do they have something? Do they have a? Are they blind when they come in? Do they have a mask over their face so they can't see the other birds?
Yes, they are all masked when
okay.
they come in.
I thought so. All right.
And they got
the blues and the reds are masked. You can bet on each color. Apparently. Once the gringos showed up to the cockfight, it was everybody else in the town versus us. We had money, so.
Okay, so who's making the odds, though? Like,
there were no odds. It was when they got in the ring, 20 on red, 20 on blue.
And you went 20 back.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
I mean, does it get heated there? Is it all...
No, not. We were all having fun. They
okay.
knew we
okay.
were there on vacation, and we were yeah. with locals, so they knew we were.
Right.
It literally was one of the best experiences of my life because they were nicking us at the same time, knowing we had nothing to go on.
Right.
You know.
Now,
we
never
had no
seen
backup.
Them fight before.
We had nothing
yeah.
to do.
Now I know
yeah.
nothing.
We had nothing.
I don't know anything about this. Now, do they fight to the death?
Yes,
that's awful, man. I can't go there with you, man. I can't do that,
Rick.
I can't do that, man. No,
you don't necessarily see that though. You actually.
Well, then how do
you
know if you won?
Oh, you know.
They'll fight until you know.
Trust me.
You know, they take the one out, and the one stays in, and that's the end.
Mm.
And then Jimmy Lennon Jr. comes in and announces the winner.
They got their own Michael Buffer there.
Yeah, exactly.
He goes to 77-0.
Dude, that was a great story, Andrew. Thank you.
No, it is quite the scene though. It was nothing like I would ever have imagined growing up in the suburbs of Orlando and then moving to the beach and nothing I would have ever.
Now, do they if they win and they're not injured, do they continue to fight?
No. Yep.
Do they bring him into a different room to stud?
I can't lie.
Like American Pharoah.
I can't lie. RB3. I'm not sure.
I mean, you can get a couple million dollars for the winner of the Kentucky Derby. What do you get for the winning cock? I mean, what does that provide for you?
The next night, I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
Man, I'm gonna wave the flag. No way. Not for me. I can't do this.
I'm with you, Andrew. I'm in. Holler at me now.
All right, and with JJ Ren. All right, man. No, thanks. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Yep.
Day.
I'm gonna disagree with you there. I can't do that.
Yeah, I could see why a lot of people probably wouldn't be.
No. You know, I have no problem with Mother Nature and how people how animals survive.
But this is a little different. Putting them in a ring together, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly Mother Nature working itself out.
Yeah, but those poor, I mean, I don't know.
Oh, I agree. I agree with you. It's inhumane, but I also agree with Andrew. I would love to check it out.
You know,
I'm a terrible person.
It's just like, I understand that, you know, when it's time for the cows or the pigs, I don't necessarily need to be in there.
I don't need to see it.
Yeah.
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 I just want to enjoy it on my dinner plate.
I remember the first time that I saw someone cut a chicken's head off and it ran around. I was like, wait a minute, man. I don't need it.
Pull it off.
Yeah.
The term running around like a chicken with its head cut off is
totally
legit. Totally real.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
It's like a lizard when it's a little tail runner.
All right. Let's get to the live tour. Let's do that on the other side. Appreciate the input there. Hey, Tuesday nights, we're on a little bit later. It's where you're going to hear some cockfighting.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
The Live Tour continues beginning Thursday in Portland. And there are people out there who aren't all that happy about it. I kind of want to stay away from the political side of this because I listened in today. It was a 30-minute presser. Pat Perez, who's now 46. Okay. You've got Brooks Koepka, who clearly right now wants to be the number one villain in all of sports. I think he wants it more than Kyrie Irving or Westbrook, which, by the way, I think we're going to get to that tomorrow, or if not Thursday, the whole role of the media baiting now. If you look at Steve Smith and you look at Skip Bayless, and I don't want to waste time on that now, but we'll get to that later in the week. But the Liv press conference, I had to look for it, okay? It wasn't, I don't think it was shown anywhere.
Was it on YouTube?
I think it was. I think that's where I got it. And the third member is Patty Reed. And, you know, I think we all have our feelings on this and, you know, where they were when we heard about it, when Phil made the comments. And I know you've read the book.
The Shipnuck book, right? Yeah. Now I'm reading it, about halfway through.
I don't want you to spoil it all because I want to read it as well. Alan Shipnuck, one of my favorite all-time golf books, is Bud, Sweat, and Tease. But, he, you know, he's a very good writer. And he was thrown out of the first Live Tour when he tried to go interview Phil Mickelson after one of his rounds or just be part of the media scrum after either his Thursday or Friday round. But anyway, today, a new perspective in my mind was put on this by members formerly of the PGA Tour. To me, it's always been, it's about the money, it's about the money, and can you go out and play golf and accept this money when you're going to hear all of these human rights issues? All three of them, every time they were asked a question, would give a similar answer. I'm here to play golf. I'm here to play golf. But then we started getting into it. Pat Perez, okay? He's like, I'm 46 years of age. I've played 515 PGA Tour events in my life since 1990. I play 30 to 30. He gets cut a lot, as all these golfers do. He goes to 30 to 33 events a year. He talked about how he missed his wife having, you know, the birth of their son. It was rent out a private plane for $150,000 or whatever. So he discusses that. And he says, at this point, are you kidding me? I've got a chance to come over here and play on this tour where there's not the grind 32, 33 times a year. You know, instead you're going to be playing, what, 7 or 8 events on the Live Tour. Koepka, who is so, what word am I looking for here? He's so intense. He's so, why are you asking me this question? First off, Brooks Koepka said today, and the way he said it, he said, you guys aren't going to believe me, but I didn't even think about going and enjoying the Live Tour until after the U.S. Open, which a lot of people are going to argue about because apparently he moved, you know, he took off his Twitter feed, member of the PGA Tour. He totally erased that and became a big story on that particular day. But anyway, he came out and he said that. And he said the exact same thing. He said, here, it's so much easier to do what you need to do. He said he went out and played 18 holes in like under 4 hours on a practice round. That, and I am aware of practice rounds here. I've seen many of them at the Players. It takes forever.
Why, though?
To play 9 holes. Because guys are taking 2 and 3 shots.
Oh, I see. They're literally practicing.
Guys are getting on the greens and, you know, several different putts. And you may have 150 golfers going around the Players or any tournament where you have 48 golfers at a Live event. He said such things as, there are times in the PGA Tour where you can't find a spot on the range. There are times on the PGA Tour where you can't find open green to putt on. I'm talking about on practice days, you know, Tuesday and Wednesday or before your round on a Thursday and Friday. And, you know, he said yesterday he went out, played a practice round, did some putting, went to the range, and all of a sudden he had like 3 hours of free time. And he didn't even know what to do with himself. So, again, these are just some points, some bullet points that I got from the press conference today that I wasn't aware of before. So there's a few more. Patty Reed goes on to say, Jay Monahan, the commissioner, has never listened to the players. Okay? Every other league, every other association, whether you like it, dislike it, you know, we just started talking about the NFL and the NFLPA. They're going to be at odds here. They are at odds on the Deshaun Watson situation. They do not listen to the players. You're reading the book right now. Phil Mickelson comes out and calls the PGA Tour a dictatorship. I mean, I think that's an awful term to use, but he said it. They don't listen to the players. Guess what? At the LIV Tour, they are absolutely listening to the players. Patrick Reed also made a good point, okay? He's got an 8-year-old and he's got a 4-year-old. He plays 30-some-odd events a year. You actually get penalized if you don't battle late in the year. And if you're not playing in events, then your FedEx overall standings are going to go down. I mean, in order to be a top 10 or whatever it is, obviously you need to acquire more points. You need to have more top 10s. You need to win more events. Well, he says there's been weeks and months where he's not home with his kids. He's not home with his wife. This event, again, allows them to play 7 or 8 events and then go back home and be with their family. He talked about being on the road for an entire month and coming back for a week. But when you're home for that week, your mind is on where you're playing next and you're going to turn right around and travel. And I don't think any of us are going to feel sorry for members who are on the PGA Tour. But for me, it was a little bit refreshing only because it was more than just the money, okay? I'm sure the money's unbelievable. I know the money is unbelievable. But now they're giving us other reasons. They're telling us they're being treated better, all right? It's not a large sample size. I mean, this is the second event, so that may be a little unfair. They will not have the grind. They talked about the injuries that these guys deal with. People don't think of golf and then think of injuries, but man, it's literally neck to toe that you can hurt yourself, and especially if you're a warrior who's out there on the range time and again working on things and then trying to get ready Thursday through Sunday. When these events are spread out, you have an opportunity to go back home and heal a little bit. And let's be honest, you don't have to work as hard. You don't have to grind. Okay, so I'm not saying it's right. Bryson DeChambeau went on today, and of course DeChambeau, he's always going to be a little bit off the wall. He said what he likes most about this is that it'll give him more opportunities for his YouTube channel. I mean, what's up? I mean, you know, look at Matty Wolf, okay? He joined this week. Matt Wolf is 23. He is 23. He's been depressed. He said he left Oklahoma State too soon. He missed the hell out of Stillwater. If he could have his way, he would be back at Oklahoma State. He went from a guy who won his third ever PGA Tour event, won it. He had 2 top 4 finishes in 2020. He got it up to number 12 in the world. Well, currently right now, he's number, I think, 74 in the world. His game is starting to get away from him at the age of 23. And again, if he's given this type of opportunity and he can deal with the naysayers and everyone who's going to get on him as far as human rights, there you have it. Listen to this quote today. This is from a 23-year-old, Matthew Wolf. Quote, "So it's like, do I want to spend time with my girlfriend and my dog at home and enjoy my time off and sleep in my own bed? Or do I want to go travel again across the country and go to work with my swing coach and not have time for that?" They're making a legitimate point, whether you agree or disagree. Less work, more freedom, less wear and tear, not going out there and grinding, and you're still getting paid.
And there's guys like Ricky Fowler, who I think, you know, went from winning the Players and finishing top 10s and all these majors and stuff to now he's not doing anything. You know, Sergio Garcia, who's sort of on the back end of his career. These guys aren't making money anymore. So why wouldn't they go over there? Why wouldn't they make the cut? Ricky, I'm surprised, hasn't been invited. I don't know if he's, like, not invited. Is he the one guy who's not invited? Or why he's not on there? I just read an article today about, like, why isn't Ricky in LIV Golf?
Yeah.
Are you going to watch it?
No, because it's not that competitive to me. Patrick Reed said there's more champions in this week's LIV Tour event than there actually are out of the John Deere.
Which is competing, exactly.
How's that for look at us now?
Well, this is the argument, this was one of the main arguments from the PGA Tour. Well, they're not playing against the best in the world anymore. Yeah, the LIV Tour is not the best in the world, but they're now the PGA Tour isn't the best in the world. They don't have all the best anymore.
The PGA Tour is going to be able to find new stars. It's still going to be incredibly competitive, but you have more major winners this week out in Oregon, and you got a group of about 48. I'm guessing there's maybe, 10 to 12 out of that group that I actually wouldn't mind watching play. I mean, you could say what you want about this tour, but when you get DJ and Pat Reed and you get Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka and Abraham Anser,
Tyler
Wolf
in.
Matt Wolf is 73. Okay, he is 73, 74 in the world. So, you know, some of the Louis Oosthuizens, the Charles Schwartzel, the Sergio Garcia, the Phil Mickelsons, the Kevin Nas. I don't know how much
big names
draw they're going to have.
Yeah, big names, but they haven't won anything in a while. I guess Phil, obviously, last year won. But there's a lot of majors between all these guys, and there's something to be said for that.
So anyway, my point is, at least I heard something. You know what I mean? And it made me kind of sit back a little bit and say, whoa, you know, what is really going on here? And, you know, I've always been one of those who believes that the PGA Tour treats these players, you know, in an unbelievable fashion. But you go and you look. And I mentioned it last week. The highest paid ever, okay? If you look at gross earnings on the PGA Tour, let me find it for you. Tiger Woods has made $120.9 million in his entire career. Dustin Johnson just got that for joining the LIV Tour. Phil Mickelson is second all-time in career earnings on the PGA Tour, $95 million. He got reportedly $200 million. Okay? Let's look at this year's calendar year. There's been a record-setting year by Scottie Scheffler. He's made $12 million. Great money. Phenomenal money. It's the most ever in one single season on the PGA Tour. What do you think Scottie Scheffler would be able to command?
Oh, my God.
If he said, yeah, I'll come to the LIV Tour. So, and then another point made by Pat Reed was, well, look what they're doing now. They just added $54 million. They just added these extra events where they're going to have no cut.
Where was that money?
They're going to have no cut.
Which this is the number one argument they had originally. Oh, so they're playing in a tournament with no cut and not the best players in the world? That's not the golf I know. That's not the golf I love. And it's like, oh, well, you're immediately doing that. So you're hypocrites, just like you say these players are hypocrites. And yeah, so now all of a sudden you have $54 million, which funny that it's exactly 54, which is sort of the name of the other tour. $54 million to throw and splash around. Like, why weren't you doing that before?
This is what they're going to have to do.
They
got
to get rid of Monahan, man.
This is what they're going to have to. I like Jay Monahan. I think he was totally blindsided by this. And that's a problem.
He's treated this terribly.
That's a problem.
You can't lose DeChambeau, you can't lose Koepka, you can't lose Phil, you can't lose these guys like this and just still have this guy running the tour. That's terrible.
The folks in Boston cheered Phil Mickelson.
Dude, people don't care about this, man. Well, there's people on the text line talking about human rights. I get all that. But
yeah.
When it comes to it, listen, if they came to Jacksonville, say what you want. People go to that.
Well, okay, and I know you mentioned the text line. Here's one, the 2009. This is what they're going to have to deal with. They're taking cash from terrorists. No justifying it. Look at the characters. Reed, Jarrett, Kepka, ass. DJ, dumb. I mean, I love these one-word answers or one or two in...
And guess what? They're all making hundreds of millions of dollars while you sit there and text about how evil Saudi is. Sorry, bro.
The media tried.
Deal with it. They've tried their propaganda so hard with that, and it's getting some folks, but the rest of us just don't care about that. I mean, like, I'll watch a PGA Tour event and see, like, a Northrop Grumman commercial. You know, like, they got blood on their hands too, homie. Yep. Like, who are you to decide who's the worst of the worst when they have events in China? Like, oh, so China's cool, but Saudi's not. Like, I'm not a fan of Saudi Arabia bombing Yemen, but guess who is? Our military's doing that too. Our government helps fund that too. So now should we not have like military appreciation day at the players because of that? Like, where do you draw the line with your human rights and what you care about? It's all bad. There's lots of bad stuff everywhere, but I would like to see somebody offer you double the money at your work for half the work and then you decline it. I would love to see you do that, Texter.
42-62, champions from how long back? None of these guys have been winning. They're missing cuts. That's not true. That's not true. Well, to some extent, you can make the case that there's a little bit of validity there. But, you know, Oosthuizen has had a good run through majors. Patty Reed won a Masters. DJ finally got off the Schneid, won a couple of majors.
Phil won last year.
Koepka went 1-1, 2-4. Before this year's U.S. Open. Yeah, Phil Mickelson became the oldest player to ever win a major a year ago at the PGA Championship.
Like, that argument had a lot of validity 3 or 4 weeks ago.
It did.
Now you don't have that anymore.
Well, when you could bring up...
When DJ Poulter, came, I was like, damn.
When you could bring up Poulter, and you could bring up Schwartzel... And you could bring up Lee Westwood, and you could bring up Sergio, and you could bring up Phil Mickelson. Okay, that's one thing. But again, now you're bringing in, whether you like him or not, Patrick Reed. Whether you like him or not, DJ. Whether you like him or not, Brooks Koepka. Whether you like him or not, Brando Chamblee. Not to mention Abraham Answer. And others are coming. You know, Pat Perez, he's kind of a jackass to me. I appreciate... The fact that he's honest,
he never won anything.
This is a no-brainer for him. I mean, it absolutely is. I mean, the guy's been in 515 events. I mean, I'm sure if you look at what he's done from 1990 on, he's probably earned $1 million-plus almost every year, or if not in the high six digits. But his point is, man, I'm on the road 33-some-odd weeks a year. If I sound like I'm defending the LIV Tour, that's not where I'm going with this. What I'm saying is I have somewhat of a new perspective on this from what the players said today.
I empathize with some of these guys. Like, the money, and it's hard to turn that down. It changes your entire... Listen, what John Rahm said a couple weeks ago was asinine. And absurd. Like, $400 million won't change my life much. Me and my girlfriend decided that. We sat down and decided $400 million. What are you, an idiot? Your career earnings is like $40 million, dude. $400 million would change generations of your family's life. Not just you and your kids. Like, this is your kids. That's a big thing to turn.
Here's another one. Have you ever heard of Pat Tillman? They're gonna have to deal with that. That is what the other side is going to do with this. And it's going to be very interesting. I want to say this right now. If Greg Norman is serious and the LIV Tour is serious, that they want to grow the game, what if they start poaching colleges? What if they start poaching amateurs? What if they say, forget about the Korn Ferry Tour? How much money are you going to make with Korn Ferry? Come to our Korn Ferry Tour and look at the purse here compared to the purse that you're making with a tour that changes its name. You know, every couple of years, it was just the web.com tour. So that's the other whole side of this. If and are there people smart enough in that room? Because they all want to get theirs, and apparently they are. But are they smart enough now and then to turn around and say, whoa, whoa, we gotta build this just like you build football. You get your players out of college, the way they change the rules in the NBA, the way that they've changed the rules in the National Hockey League. We talked about international explosion in Major League Baseball to begin the program tonight. Baseball doesn't register in the United States of America anymore. It's an expensive sport, okay? Golf is an expensive sport. For every one of these men that we mention who are so successful, there's so many other guys that are grinding. Go read the Alan Shipnuck book, Bud, Sweat, and Tears, about how Rich Beem and his former caddy, Steve Duplantis, who unfortunately was killed out in Australia by trying to cross the street. These guys slept in cars. These guys ponied up enough money and shared hotel rooms. So you don't hear about those guys. Anyway, let's take a break. Let's do that.
We're way over.
Yes, we are. We got to take a break. I'm way, 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 way overdue.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I'm going to admit to one mistake, and I'm going to pat myself on the back all at the same time. Going back how many ever years it was, I said the biggest mistake that the National Hockey League ever made was their strike and that fans would never come back. The second biggest mistake that the National Hockey League ever made was leaving ESPN. And the reason for that is there are so many casual sports fans in the country that come home from work, have dinner with their wife and kids, put them to bed, ask them if the homework is coming along, doing everything, and then they finally sit down on the Lazy Boy. One of the first stations they're going to go to, if they're a sports fan, is ESPN. You're not going to go look for it on the, what was it, the old Oxygen Channel?
Outdoor Life Network.
Right. Rick. And
the Versus Network.
The Versus Network.
They changed names.
Yeah, they did.
Because you can't have hockey on the Outdoor Life Network considering it's inside.
Stanley Cup ratings up 83%.
I knew it would.
83. Like,
I saw more hockey advertisements and stuff this year than the last 10 years combined.
Last year, and granted it was a COVID deal, but 2.5 million on NBC and the NBC Sports Network. If you go back to 2019, it was very highly ranked. It was 5.5, but you had a couple of monsters in there. I mean, if you've ever been to Boston or St. Louis, those are two of the bigger hockey markets that you'll find in the United States of America. You can put Detroit in there as well with the Red Wings. So anyway, ratings are up, and Gary Bettman realized that. You got to get back on ESPN, and I think it brought a lot of folks back and watched hockey. And if you compare that to all of these playoff games, especially the NBA Finals, where there wasn't one of those games inside 10 points, right? Weren't all five of those or all six of those 10 points or more?
Yeah, it seemed like by the end of the fourth quarter, they all stretched out to big game.
I mean, many of these hockey games were overtime of the overtime variety, or they were one-goal games. And anyway, it was just kind of cool to see.
Were you happy we didn't have a three-peat?
Here's where I am. Tampa is a little bit of a rival to Boston, and I've been to playoff games in Tampa. But I still have a bad taste in my mouth for when the Boston Bruins just handed over Ray Bourque.
Still, to this day.
It's only been 21 years. I mean, it happened in 2001. And that's hard for me. Because Ray Bourque finally won a cup, and then he brought it back to Boston. And so, I don't know, I could have gone either way. But I enjoyed the hockey No doubt about it. Folks, that's it. Hackers coming up right now. We're with you tomorrow night, Thursday night, Friday night, 6 to 8 for JJ. My name is Rick Ballew. Again, I don't check the text line. Get me on Twitter, Ballew 1010XL.